John Podcast Network.
All right, we are taking a little divergent from movie talk, although we've already mentioned a TV show earlier. We're now going to give out our award for Best TV of 2022. This one was hard because I didn't really watch a lot of TV last year. I don't know why. Nothing quite grabbed me. A show that did really grab me was What We Do in the Shadows. Christine, thank you for that recommendation. That show's amazing. But that's not my pick because I've only watched the first two seasons. My pick for 2022, what I thought was the best show that I saw, was going back to our conversation about IP, Andor, the Star Wars show following Cassian Andor. It's about, I think, four or five years before the events of Rogue One and sort of seeing him on his homeworld and then kind of becoming this rebellion leader on the path toward that. I think this is the best thing Star Wars related that Disney has done in its entire run. I think it's part of it is because they were allowed to do like 16 episodes. And so just a long form storytelling with a couple really great arcs, really great side characters. Andy Serkis is a huge standout in season one. He's a great character in that show. And bringing back Genevieve O'Reilly, who plays Moff Mamma, and Stellan Skarsgård. Who doesn't love him? He's great as Luthen. Has a really great speech in the show. And so Andor really reinvigorated... Mom, thank you, Christine. Andor really reinvigorated my interest in Star Wars. Because I really liked Kenobi as well. But Andor, it was the first Disney Star Wars show, not shot in the volume. The volume is like the giant 360-degree TV screens. And the volume's an amazing tool, but after two seasons of Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, Obi-Wan Kenobi, after like five or six seasons of television, it was great to have something that was traditionally shot in real locations, mixing real locations and sets. So for me, Andor was a standout. I binged it in like two nights. It was so hard to put down, and they're only doing two seasons. So it's great that, you know, they're going to jump ahead a couple years. And then I think they said the show's going to end right before Rogue One starts. So I thought Andor was a standout show. One of the few shows that I watched in 2022. So definitely recommend if you kind of fell off the Star Wars interest train. But I think Andor can hook most old school fans back in.
Well, like Connor, I don't watch much TV. I feel like there's so many shows and I can never make time for them. At the same time, I usually watch like a movie a day, so I probably could. But having said that, I haven't seen a lot that was new this year. But one that did stand out that I did watch all the way through, unlike a lot of other series this year, was a show called This Fool, which is on FX. Really funny show. It's the concept is that it's someone who works for an organization of returning citizens. And his cousin happens to be someone who was recently paroled. He is thrust into this sort of like activist and forthright rehabilitation or social social reintroduction program, and struggles with just his cousin being a part of it, not for any particular reason other than that they have their own familial friction, which it results in some really, really funny scenes and some really great episodes. It is by the creators of Comedy Central's Corporate, which is another show that I really love, RIP Lance Reddick. But it's interesting because it's in the style of Corporate in that way. It's very like it's very cynical and biting comedy, but it punches at the idea of punching down. Like the jokes are at the expense of people that punch down and stuff, and not in a way that like glorifies it. Like the active characters are the ones telling those people, like, and the joke being that like, hey, you've fallen behind and this is ridiculous, which is refreshing and really cool. So I would say that show is pretty fun and definitely worth a watch. I believe it's probably on Hulu is where I watched it, but it's only it's a pretty brief season and it flies by pretty fast. Half hour episodes, some really great comedy and some really interesting social commentary, and features Michael Imperioli from The Sopranos. So worth a look.
Nice recommendation, Dave. Sam, best TV for you of last year?
For me, it was Blackbird. I think I talked about this at length throughout the year, so this is really no surprise. I'm just right now actually reading Jimmy Keane's book, so it's kind of topical and on my mind. It's a phenomenal show. I think the actor who played Larry Hall ended up winning an award, maybe, for his performance. I don't know. I can't remember. But critically, did not receive as much hubbub as it should. I think that Taron Egerton did like a phenomenal job. And I just like think that people really overlook him for some reason. Same thing with Rocketman. I don't know why that he like wasn't nominated for an Oscar. Bullshit. But so this is my way of reclaiming the honor for him and this show.
I love that. Christine, I bet I can guess what it is.
So I could keep it fresh. Well, okay. Yes. The bear was definitely one of my fave seasons of TV. But what I will say, well, I was gonna give it to, because as long as this show is on the air, I'm still just gonna love it. Season 2 of Reservation Dogs, just so good. Just show just keeps getting better. I just hope that it. I mean, I know season 3 is in the works, anyways, but. So like as long as we do better with that, and as long as the show is still on, it'll probably be my favorite season of TV, unless it just goes down the tube, which many shows do. But so far, it second season was so good, and so yeah, I would say it's a tie between The Bear and Reservation Dogs season 2.
I've got to check that out. That's there's a lot of great people involved in that series that I'm big fans of.
It's so good, like it's. So funny, but like obviously like so it's like so finely tuned in every possible way, which is obviously the hardest thing you can do. So I have nothing but good things to say about that show.
That's also an FX show, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. FX, man.
Got some really good programming. Days. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guys, we are nearing the end of our award categories. We're well over halfway through onto our sixth category, being best director. I feel like I've said this for all my picks. This one was also really hard. But in the spirit of spreading the love and talking about a movie that I really adore, it's the 2022 movie that I've seen the most by far. And so I am picking the directors of the Bob's Burgers movie. Lauren Bouchard and Bernard Dairyman. It's very difficult, I imagine, to take a 23-minute animated show that's been running for years and years and to turn it into a massive motion picture. And I think the Bob's Burgers movie exceeds in almost every single aspect of it. So apparently this film was kind of tortured for a while, delayed release dates. And so I thought the final product, I thought the story was really great. Fun songs in there. I think the screenplay is really for Bob's Burgers. I think it's great. It's like it feels like an episode just stretched out to movie length, which I think is exactly what you want for a film like this. And so I just wanted to give some love to the Bob's Burgers movies. And a lot of really great shots too that have stuck with me, and really great uses of lighting, the animation. It's just always wonderful to see a little show then when it's turned into a movie just look absolutely gorgeous and stunning. So shout out to the Bob's Burgers movie. I think I've seen it 4 times now. So it's a really, I just had to spread the love and appreciate the work that went into turning a show into a big movie. So shout out to the Bob's Burgers movie.
Solid flick in an episode that we covered, or a movie that we covered in a previous episode. So wanted to look back on. As Connor has illustrated, a tough year for picking a favorite as far as director. I think with this category, I'm more often than not drawn to the idea that a movie should be a great movie that is directed amazingly is a movie that couldn't have been directed by anyone else. And there's a lot of those this year. When it comes to the Daniels for Everything Everywhere, when it comes to Spielberg for that sort of levitating Spielbergian magic of The Fablemans, although I've got my beefs here and there with the movie. But there's one that that I think is a true return to form and a classic example of a director who is perfectly positioned for the project, and it couldn't have been brought to fruition through anyone else. And that would be Crimes of the Future by David Cronenberg. Cronenberg's a huge fan. I'm a huge fan. He's fantastic. And it feels like this is a true, like I said, a true return to form for him. We're firmly in the territory of body horror, which he is arguably the champion of. It is, it smacks of the familiar distance and coldness of Cronenberg movies, but is also, you can feel his age a little bit as he's getting older. He's almost, and this is a strange thing to say about a movie that, no spoilers, a child dies in the first 10 minutes. You can feel the director softening a bit. Like he's embracing humor in a way that he always has, but with a more pronounced acuity and attention. It tackles some really complex themes, really fantastic performances, and set design and production design all harnessed through the lens of Cronenberg in the way that only he can. So at the end of the day, I'd have to hand it off to my buddy Dave with Crimes of the Future, because God damn, is it a great movie. And boy, is he one of my favorite directors at the end of the day, at least top 10. So it's a thankful opportunity to be able to hand it over to him this year.
A surprise pick, because I forgot about that movie and I never saw it. So I'm happy to hear that you enjoyed it so much. I know Tori, former co-host, Killer Bees podcast host, also really enjoyed that movie too. Sam, over to you. Best director.
I'm giving this one to Rian Johnson for The Glass Onion. I think that Rian Johnson is the full package. He deserved better for The Last Jedi, Connor. And I'm always going to raise this guy up. I really liked the movie. I thought it was fun. It's not breaking any boundaries. It's not doing anything special. But I think that he just provides consistently great stories and great movies.
That one just snuck by me. I still haven't seen the Knives Out sequel. And I love Knives Out. Ooh. Listen to that episode. That was a really fun one to do. I think it was in theaters for like a week, right? At the end of November, and then it came out Christmas week. So I guess there's just no chance of me finding time to see it. So now there's no excuse. I can do a Glass Onion and All Quiet on the Western Front double feature. What a fun night that would be.
I thought the holiday rollout was a smart one, because I watched Glass Onion with my family. Mm. I was like, what's going to be like something True. That might satiate everyone's taste or whatever. And I feel like that discussion was probably going on in many households over the holidays.
Fair.
So yeah, my best director was sort of, I'll runner alert or whatever. It was split between Jordan Peele's Nope. I think is in your sort of criteria, Dave. I don't think anyone else could have directed that movie besides Jordan Peele. But I have to say my director award is going to Charlotte Wells for After Sun, because I feel like, you know, sometimes I watch a movie and I'm like, fuck, I wish I could make a movie like that. And I feel like that's kind of also the sign of just good direction pulls you into her vision, and just such a beautiful movie. And knockout direction. And eliciting really natural performances. I mean, Paul Mescal is like, you know, the fucking buzziest buzzy bee of 2022. And I'm sure 2020, whatever. It's like, fuck. Yeah. He's maybe two everywhere, but like his performance is undeniably great. And then I cannot recall her name, who plays the daughter. Such an amazing natural performance from her. So it takes a good director to also get good natural performances from their actors.
Nice. Giving that movie a lot of love, Christine, tonight. So we are now on to our second to last category, and that is Worst Picture. I love that we do our own award show, because it means absolutely nothing, just like the Oscars. And we can have more fun with it than the Oscars, such as having a worst picture. I think this is going to be pretty controversial for folks here, and also who listen, perhaps, because it comes from one of my favorite working directors. And my worst picture. Now, if you were to check my letterbox, you'll see that the very first movie I watched was Marry Me, which is not my pick. Because that movie knew what it wanted to be, and that was actually a pretty fun group watch.
Hell yes.
My worst pick was so utterly disappointing to me that there's really no other option, and that is The Northman. Oh, I think The Northman,
wow.
As much as I love Robert Eggers, Alexander Skarsgård, Ethan Hawke, everybody in that movie. I think for me, that movie totally and utterly failed on many levels. I thought the story was horrendous, like totally just not enjoyable. I got nothing out of it. The plot twist that happened, mystical in his mind fight with the knight was just like totally didn't work to get the, like, is it a fairy tale? Is this happening? I didn't think the action was that well executed. Like, oh, it's Viking. I don't know. To me, it just didn't feel, just didn't work in like on any level. The movie was way too dark. I don't know if it was the TV I was watching it on.
I had that experience too.
The night scenes were just, and I'm not, you know, like House of the Dragon famously had a very dark episode. They shot it during the daytime and then edited it to look like it's at night, which is awful. Never do that. But I thought that scene was way, that episode was way more watchable in the dark than many parts of The Northmen. I just need, did that movie film on location? Because everything about it just screamed set, screamed fake, screamed, this is just not in like a real place where these things are happening, which is like fine. Like, I don't know, just I was so looking forward to it because I love The Witch is great. I love The Lighthouse. Please listen to that episode with our friend Tom. That's Lighthouse is one of my probably top 10 favorite movies of the past couple years. But The Northmen I just found so utterly and horribly disappointing. And I have no desire to ever watch it again. So I think just the sheer level of disappointment and just sitting there for 2+ hours, just like, this is so not it, Robert Egg. And I think he said so, like, this is just not it. This is not what I'd have to do. So please make your Nosferatu movie. Please do whatever you want afterward, your smaller scale. The Lighthouse 2, let's just make that an IP. But yeah, The Northmen just didn't do it for me. So I don't know if that's a controversial opinion among this crew or listeners. If I'm wrong, please tell us, butterwiththatpodcast@gmail.com. But yeah, for me, The Northmen was the worst picture of 2022. For me.
So that keeps it spicy because also, as we've said, our criteria for these different categories can range. And I feel like your criteria was like, what did I have such also high expectations for, and how were the, how did they fall so far? It's like measuring right. That distance. Yeah. No, that's a really good spicy pick.
I can't say I wholly disagree. I don't know that I would shelf it for worst picture, but that's because of the screed that I've written that I'm about to read here. But yeah, I'll politely admit that I was disappointed also. I liked portions of it, but yeah, it was a bummer of a follow-up to two fantastic films, I would say. This the movie that I've selected pisses me off so much that I wrote something down. So, so I mean, 2022, as we've covered and are about to cover, especially with Best Picture, has brought us some real highlights, but it's also brought us the depths of Disney's live-action Pinocchio, The Bubble, and Morbius. Some truly low, low points. However, one film that stood out as a particularly crass waste of time and talent was Andrew Dominik's Blonde. This Marilyn Monroe biopic based on a fictional telling of Monroe's life by author Joyce Carol Oates has no interest in his subject beyond an overtread descent into cruelty. What could have been an interesting meditation on industry abuse and sexism in more capable hands unravels as a litany of grief porn nonsense that makes no effort to capture Monroe in any sense as a woman or a character or an actor, with the built-in cop-out that is a work of interpretive fiction. From fabricated love affairs to condescending daddy issues to an anachronistic abortion scene where a first trimester fetus appears as a fully formed CGI infant with its own voiceover narration begging for a chance at life, the film's historical inventions ring tasteless and disgusting. The film's torture of Monroe offers no new insight into her life while erasing the biggest factors in her earned stardom, aptitude, and talent. But don't just take my word for it. When asked for his thoughts on Monroe's career, director Andrew Dominik offered, quote, "Does anyone watch Marilyn Monroe movies?" When the interviewer contrasted that by saying that they are a big fan of her work, especially the film Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, Dominik shot back, quote, "They're well-dressed whores. I don't know," end quote. This telling interview gives us a perfect insight into the ethos behind Dominik's Blonde, not only the failure to make a film that serves as a rebuke of industry sexism, but one that in fact shamelessly advances it. Utter garbage, avoid at all costs.
Damn. I am glad I have not seen Blonde. After you watched it and told us a version, you know, something similar, it's like, yeah, I'm going to stay far away from that. So I'm happy that The Northmen is my worst pick because it sounds like that. universally is would be many people's.
And he's got a good track record. Like The Assassination of Jesse James is a great movie. Yeah.
It just it turns out that, you know, as we've so often found out, people with very shitty opinions can make good movies on occasion, but this is not
true,
one of them.
True.
Wow. Well, how do you follow that one up? So my pick for worst film might be controversial with this group. I don't care. Is The Batman.
Ooh.
I can't believe how much I fucking hate this movie.
Was it just the milk?
No. 3 hours long for your first time out as Batman. What the fuck? 3 different endings. And they go full throttle. They fucking flood Gotham. What? Ridiculous. I think that I've had enough of actors in fat suits. The putting, what's his name? Colin Farrell. Nope. Colin Farrell. Who? What's
Colin
his name?
Farrell.
Colin Farrell in a fat suit and completely disfiguring his face. Just hire a fat actor then. Whatever. The car chase scene was so long. People on TikTok were saying, you can go to the bathroom during this. It's fine. You're not missing anything. And ultimately, I feel oversaturated with Batman. I don't think that they did anything different than what Christopher Nolan did. I do appreciate that there's some like more darkness to it, but darkness to the point of it just felt unnecessary. I did like Paul Dano as the Riddler or whatever, bringing back the Joker in the way that they did at the very end. Sucked. The milk, I can't get over it. And God, there was another part that, the music, the theme of Batman was so good at first, they completely overuse it to the point. It's supposed to feel inevitable and heavy and like, oh, Jesus Christ, like he is like vengeance and whatever. And then I just got bored with it. They overused it. And I think that they tried to use the fact that Robert Pattinson was Batman as like the thing. And I can't believe it. Not only did I go to the theater to see it, but then I watched it with my roommate and I fell asleep through it because I was so fucking bored.
This is why I love the worst pick. Why we do it. I love the hot takes. I definitely have cooled on the Batman. So I'd be curious to rewatch it at some point in the future. Cause I was pretty hot on it, but you bring up a lot of really great points, Sam, that I really can't argue with in many ways.
Yeah, I did like the Batman, but those are very solid arguments.
That's a hard agree from me, Sam, as well. You fell asleep. I tried twice to get through it, and each time when the movie felt like it should be winding down, I looked at the clock, and there was still 40 minutes left of the movie. Yeah. So I love everyone's hot takes for worst movie. Mine is, I would say, a pretty obvious worst movie. I might have been the only one who saw this movie, except for my 4 other friends who watched it with me. We might be the only people in the entire world who actually sat through the entirety of this movie, which is now this movie shot in 2015, but not released till 2022, is Ooh. The King's Daughter, starring Pierce Brosnan as Louis XIV. I swear I don't think anyone else watched this
movie. I forgot about this movie.
Yeah, right.
This was for sure, this was for sure the worst movie of 2022. Louis XIV in this story is in search of a mermaid to kill to get immortal life. And then he suddenly also discovers that he has a daughter who comes to live with him. So it's like what a girl wants meets like some fucked up fairy tale where like the daughter is like, oh my God, what is it like to live in royalty? I get a new dress and I get to like try to be with my father. And
can I ask a question?
Please.
Is his daughter the mermaid?
I was gonna ask that too.
Is this a Little Mermaid thing?
No, his daughter's not even the mermaid. Now his daughter befriends the mermaid. It turns out somehow the daughter has an important connection to the mermaid. No, but he keeps this mermaid trapped in his castle. It's so fucked up. It's so messed up. And the movie was sitting in the can for 7 years because no one wanted to come within like 50 miles of this movie and release it.
What was this called again?
It's called The King's Daughter.
That's an awful title.
Sounds so stupid.
So, okay, the only reason I remember that I watched this movie is because my phone said memories of last year. And like, do you guys' phones do this where like yearly anniversaries will pop up? So what pops up is this time last year. And I was like, oh, what was I doing this time last year? I kind of got a little drunk. I had taken like 15 photos, stills of Pierce Brosnan as Louis XIV. And I actually made a TikTok. And this was the 2 days I had a TikTok. And I just filled it with pictures, stills of this movie. And so thank you, phone, for reminding me I watched the worst film of 2022. Filled up a third of my camera roll with pictures of The King's Daughter, made a TikTok, 2 days later deleted it, and I moved on with my life. But it was an important, it was a formative period in my life in 2022.
I see that it's free on Amazon. Is this worth a hate watch?
I mean, sure. Like, yeah, why not?
It's probably going to happen now.
Okay, there's so many. I want to devote an entire episode to this film because there are so many interesting things to talk about. The set design is so bizarre. The costume, it was like they hired like 4 different costume designers and couldn't decide where or when this movie is set. So many things I loved. Loved, hated.
Wow.
I love you guys. This is my favorite segment of every award show.
It is kind of the best part.
Yeah, this is what keeps them coming back to the award show year after year. Everyone's worst picks. No, these are all really great. What if this was a theme? We just all, 1 month, just all watched our worst picks and tore them apart.
We did that once.
Yeah, could do it again.
But I'm not watching X-Men Apocalypse again, if that's what you're asking.
We had to talk about that movie twice.
Oh, that's right.
Twice.
Because the recording crapped out.
I totally forgot.
So we had to talk about it twice.
So you had to talk about a movie you didn't give a shit about again. Yeah.
I did think I did a better job the second time. It was a little more coherent. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Enough about X-Men Apocalypse. Enough about these awful movies. Let's get to our final category, which is Best Picture. I am not at all original with this. I picked Everything Everywhere All at Once. I think I saw this movie actually over a year ago. I think I saw it opening weekend. So it's been a long time since I've watched it, but it's still, when I think about all the movies of 2022, even Tar, when I think about all the movies that came out last year, I think this movie has stuck with me the most. While I haven't revisited it yet, I don't want to pay to rent it. Like, come on, come to Amazon or HBO or something. It's a movie that I will definitely revisit when it's convenient, and when it's a movie, it's like, I really hadn't seen many movies last year. This is the movie that I would show people. There's one movie from 2022 that I think folks need to see. I think it's Everything Everywhere All at Once. I think it won way too many awards at the Oscars, 9 or something like that. Definitely all deserved, especially shout out to Jamie Lee Curtis, who finally won her Oscar. I mean, she's just wonderful. And so she was amazing as a supporting character in that movie. And Everything Everywhere All at Once. But I think the love should have been spread around a little more at the Academy. But without a doubt, I think for me, the best picture of last year was Everything Everywhere All at Once, which makes me a little nervous for the Daniels next project, because I did not like Swiss Army Man. That's not a private opinion. I've said that a few times. I loved this movie. It's like, it's going to go something I don't like they do next, or could be something absolutely amazing again. So. Also, shout out to A24, who really cleaned up at the Oscars this year, with also The Whale with Brendan Fraser, a few other movies, Everything Everywhere All at Once. So they really have, over the course of a long time, have become a real force to reckon with in Hollywood, which is great that a genre movie like Everything Everywhere All at Once can dominate, and it's just such a good movie to dominate also. It would be so unfortunate if it was like, oh, this is the genre movie, or the wacky movie that we're just giving all these awards to, but it's just an okay movie. I think this movie is the real deal. Deserved all those awards, even though the love should have been spread around. So that's my pick for Best Picture. Incredibly, from controversial to incredibly uncontroversial, back to back. Dave, how about you? What's your Best Picture of last year?
Well, I certainly agree about Everything Everywhere as far as it's sweeping. You know, if a movie's going to sweep, I'm glad it was Everything Everywhere. It's everything that snobby cinephiles claim they want and are pissed off about sweeping. So, like, you know, I would have appreciated it spread around more, but I'm glad that it won a lot of awards. Speaking of winning a lot of awards, as far as this evening is concerned, there's one choice that that I have to hand it off to. Although this was really hard. There were a lot of movies that I really loved this year, and it was a real tight race for me between my choice and another competitor. The competitor was a film called RRR, or Triple R, an Indian film, which at 3 hours is an action spectacle that could rival any action movie I've ever seen. And also has such incredible story construction in terms of the revelation of characters' motivations and when we learn them based on the impressions that we have built up given what we've seen so far versus the backstory that has yet to be revealed. So incredible work there. But I thought to myself, I'm not very familiar with Indian cinema, so I thought I should look into Indian film critics and cinema and cultural and art critics of the nation. And I learned a lot that was really interesting, a lot that was pretty upsetting, and a lot that applies to this movie. It's an incredible action spectacle with an amazing screenplay that if you look into the history and especially the current history of India, as far as Hindu nationalism and its appeal to Islamophobia, this movie has some big problems. It does this really great, really swelling song at the end that highlights a lot of Indian revolutionaries who were instrumental in anti-British colonialism and imperialism, but it specifically excludes Muslim freedom fighters who were a big part of that resistance. So it's kind of not without its nationalistic leanings, albeit a fantastic film. So I would say check it out because it's an incredible spectacle, but keep that in mind. And on those grounds, I feel as though learning what I have from Indian film critics, I can't afford a Best Picture, even though it's fantastic. So instead, I'm going to go with Tar. It's a failsafe. It's an especially interesting movie because a lot of people have a lot of different interpretations. A lot of people think that it is a righteous reaffirming of quote unquote cancel culture, or perhaps more appropriately put, accountability culture. It has been considered a contrast of a rebuke of that. And I think that's because it is so nebulous and it's so up to interpretation. This really isn't a film that demands that you interpret it literally. This is very much a subjective experience, especially as highlighted as a character drama through the lens of someone that we're supposed to criticize. The character of Lydia Tarr is a fixture who is in a position of power and privilege and prestige that, while earned, is still opportunistically seized in manipulation in terms of every character interaction. But we're still seeing it ultimately from her eyes, so much so that when she becomes haunted by guilt, it becomes an almost metaphysical presence within the film. It's a film that defies genre definition other than perhaps being a deep character drama and perhaps a psychological drama that has a lot of current social underpinnings, but can't be pinned down. I think Todd Fields aptly invited us into a character's mind, a character that is deeply emblematic of a lot of institutional problems and one that demands that we wrestle with that. And I think that makes it a really challenging and really rich and densely layered film that I've been having trouble pushing out of my mind since I first saw it. So I would have to hand it over to Tar this year.
Nice. Another one for Tar. That's probably going to be the most, I think, pretty handily, most referenced film tonight. Sam, so your picture is not Tar. You haven't seen it. So what do you be?
What if I was like, you know what? Dave convinced me it is Tar.
His points were so convincing.
So convincing. I haven't even seen it. Just kidding. So my pick for best film of 2022 is actually a documentary on Netflix called Girl in the Picture. So as you all know, I am a big true crime fan. And honestly, true crime doesn't come without its faults. And I think that Girl in the Picture is what the genre should be at, and it's at its best. So this documentary is based on books, A Beautiful Child and Finding Sharon. The story is centered around a young girl known as Sharon Marshall, who was abducted by this dude named Franklin Delano Floyd. And she was eventually raised as his daughter. Over the course of 2 decades, he, you know, sexually assaults her, forces her to marry him. And then she actually dies in like a suspicious circumstance when it comes to like a hit and run car accident. But what this documentary does is it says, fuck that guy. We don't care about him. We care about Sharon. And so it works to find out her identity. All they really have to go from is this picture. And that not only do they find out what her name was, what happened to her, they find her family and they find her, like, her biological family. They find her everything. And it ends with them putting her name on a tombstone. And that's what this is all about, right? Like, giving people the respect they deserve. They couldn't get it when they were alive, and that fucking sucks, but at least they can have it in their final rest.
So, okay. if I'm understanding, a true crime documentary series that deconstructs the mythos behind the perpetrator and, in fact, sheds light on the victims.
Yeah, and it's just one person, this Sharon person, and it's an hour and a half documentary. So it really uses all of its time in the best way possible.
That sounds awesome. That's a great approach.
Yeah, that sounds like something I definitely want to check out. Great pick, Sam. Christine, the last pick of the night. What did you have for us for best pick? Elvis.
Oh my God. I mean,
I come in with Elvis.
I could have picked that for a worst movie, but I didn't because fucking Butler, what's his face? I really enjoyed his performance. And if there's a performance I enjoy, I'm not going to give it worst. I'm not going to give that movie worst picture. Anyhow, this best picture I thought was just, it's just one of a kind and couldn't, runner up Tar, also couldn't stop thinking about that movie. And God, that performance, the whole movie is a tour de force package. But I think the movie that I just couldn't stop thinking about was Jordan Peele's Nope. I think this movie is just so unique. Like, so as Connor said, it taps into the Western sci-fi genre, like fusing Western and sci-fi, which has been done before many times, but takes this sort of genre landscape and just like, it's not a reimagining. It's like digging deep into this cinematic tone of just like of wonder, awe, dread, beauty, horror, and also like can comment on the history of the film industry in such interesting ways without, it's very heavy, I feel like, in sort of like in metaphor and, but like things that it's just a feat. I don't know. I love a movie that I still don't feel like I get fully. And it's kind of like a, what the fuck, it just happened. What did I just watch? Cinematic experience. And I feel like that sticks with me. And I thought that was just the best movie of the year. The way the movie just bends and maneuvers, and I just keep thinking about distinct moments, like with the shard of metal that just whips across the horse's body. They're just moments that I keep returning back to. I'm like, what just happened? And I love a movie like that. So that's best picture. Would love to talk about that movie also as an episode.
Yeah, that was one when I first saw it in theater. I was like, this will be one that one of us picks one day to talk about. Yeah. Hard to disagree with everything that you brought up, Christine. I really, really enjoyed Nope. Well, that rounds out the Butter Awards. Number 4, 2023 was a really great year for movies. It's great. We're back. Movies are back. 2022. We're in 2023. Probably, I mean, Dune Part 2 is coming out this year. Best Picture? Probably.
Well, if anybody wants some a rundown on how this played out.
Yes.
Movies that got one mention, which is most of them. This is pretty slanted. It's probably our biggest pool but also our most one-sided nomination. Don't Worry, Darling, All Quiet on the Western Front, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Fire of Love, The Menu, Banshees of Inisherin, Barbarian, Prey, Bob's Burgers, Crimes of the Future, Glass Onion, Knives Out, and Girl in the Picture, all with one. Two with two, that would be After Sun and The Bear. We have one.
Both are mine because I just keep repeating the same ones.
And we also have one with 2.5, I guess I'd say, because Christine kind of like did a half recommend on that front. Nope, with 2.5. And then Tar with 6. So, Sam, are you going to watch it?
I feel like I can't now, honestly.
I feel like you'd have a good time with Tar.
I'm sure I would, but it's almost like it doesn't have quite the staying power in our lore as Meek's Cutoff, but now it sort of feels like I just can't.
You know who just came out with a new movie? It was released in Cannes last year, but now it's like its official release. Kelly Reichardt's showing up. Everyone's like, it's kind of sleepy. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, reviews are mixed, but anyhow, definitely going to watch it.
I think that's a positive for you, Christine.
I can't wait. You know me.
It's a good trailer.
Kelly does something, I drop everything and
please report back when you see it.
Oh, I will.
Well, Tar pretty single-handedly dominated this award show. Some people thought that it might have dominated the Oscars, but no. It did dominate
the award
show. Yeah, that's kind of wild that it got totally shut out. Well, in our final minutes together, thank you everybody for joining us for our fourth award show. Thank you for sticking with us for over 200 episodes, which is incredible. Be sure to check out episode 200, which was our coverage of The Wizard of Oz. That was a really fun episode to do, and one that I've been thinking about a lot. And look forward to the coming months as we bring you new themes, new movies, new discussions, new hot takes, new inside jokes that we form as we go along, which is one of my favorite parts of doing the show with everybody. Will Sam watch Tar? That will probably be the new weekly question for a while.
And Bear, and Evangelion.
Will Sam watch anything ever? Who's to say?
Anything, anywhere, at any time. That'd be your version of that movie. Well, thank you for joining us. As I said, be sure to check out the Movie John Podcast Network. Many wonderful shows on there. Some, I believe it was Hate Watch, Great Watch, did The Mummy recently.
Good episode.
So be sure to check out that episode. We also talked about The Mummy as well. So check out that Butter Classic. And email us at butterwiththatpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what your worst watch was. Let us know if we were wrong about any of our picks or if you agreed with any of our picks. And we can't wait to join you on another year of hopefully great movies. And we'll be back for Butter With That Awards 5 with hopefully some hot takes and great picks as well. Have a good whatever.
This has been a Movie John.